Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
In a world with work deadlines and horrible bosses,
if you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great.
And your team may be in last place, we can all find comfort in sports, like a signal in the sky.
Oh, come on. You're gonna leave me all alone here with less angry Rosie O'Donnell?
They call upon Gwynn and Chris with Tony Gwynn Jr.
Monte tried to sneak the cheese past the rat there.
And Chris Ello.
Strasburg ready to go. The 1-2 pitch slider, strike three, ball, a no-hitter.
Gwynn and Chris starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
Welcome back, Tony Gwynn Jr.
We really do need a show during the breaks.
AJ Cassavell here with me today, spilling in for Chris Ello.
The in-between time?
Yes. We'd have to turn off the mics, though.
Uncensored sometimes. After dark.
6:04 on the clock, last hour of Gwynn and Chris. Want to let you guys know. Wait, let me find it. Where'd it go? Oh, here we go. 97.3 The Fan. Reminds you to be a part of the SDCCU Holiday Bowl Blood Drive, November 21st at SDCCU Stadium. Two free game tickets for each donor. Reserve your spot at holidaybowl.com. All right, college football, right? Oh, wait, before I get to college football, we do have a caller. Calling to check in on your boy, David in Chula Vista. David, how you doing, man? Thanks for calling in.
I'm doing well. Sorry to interrupt college football, but I represent a groundswell of support here. Tony, we're concerned about you and your headphones. Can we have an update?
Great question, David.
You know what? I was concerned about my floppy headphone yesterday, and I had to go and get a new pair because decreasingly, the more I kept trying to stick things back together, the more it kept breaking apart. They no longer work, so I had to get a new pair.
All right. Great news. No, I don't need to do the GoFundMe then.
No.
That would have been hilarious, though.
You don't need to do a GoFundMe, David.
I'll take some new headphones.
I appreciate you looking out for me, man. Thanks for the phone call.
All right. Good night, guys.
All right. Take care. Yes, I had to go on the Best Buy today and get a new pair, man.
That was one of my favorite things yesterday is every time Tony moved, his headphone would, like, shake and fall off.
It was terrible. And
you powered through it.
I powered through it. I had to.
You played hurt.
I played hurt. I didn't need load management to get my headphones together. I had to go with a different pair this time. You know, the Beats, they have the ones that kind of fold up. And what happens when you do something like this for a living and you're constantly unfolding them, they eventually break down. So I had to just go with a pair that is kind of like the old-fashioned way.
I've broken so many headphones traveling city to city and then using them literally every single night to transcribe quotes.
I really wish they made AirPods that you could have a cord in or something. I'm talking about the newer ones.
Doesn't that diminish the purpose of AirPods?
Yeah, it does.
I think there's got to be something out there where you can, because we in most radio studios that I've been in, you have the quarter jack, which is the bigger jack, and these ones you have both. You can either have the quarter jack or you can have the smaller one.
When are we going to be able to do wireless?
That's what I'm saying. I think there's one where you could probably put it into the smaller jack and it would just Bluetooth to your AirPods.
Sounds risky, though.
It does sound risky.
Why?
I don't know. Every now and then my AirPods cut out.
Yeah, you gotta worry about the whole. This is the best part about these Beats is I don't have to charge these bad boys. So.
That's true. You were always charging. Another behind the scenes moment is Tony in a corner charging his headphones somewhere.
I would, on days that Chris is running the show, I would literally be in the seat that AJ is, and the plugs are a little far away. So I'd have to like have my mic really low, and I'd be like leaning down if I didn't have very much battery. I have to do that for like three segments, and then it eventually charged, and I'm ready to go. So anyway, back to college football. Big matchup, LSU, Alabama.
Yeah.
You're a Penn State guy, though.
I am, and it's a big week, big weekend for them too. I think I just want to rant a little bit.
Go ahead, before we let me set up your rant, because earlier we talked about what was it, the college football rankings?
Yeah, the top four.
You said you had a little bone to pick with that.
Yeah, I don't have. I understand how meaningless it is in that Penn State's going to play Ohio State, and LSU is going to play Alabama, and we're going to get a top at least three, and Clemson's going to be a part of it. But the issue I take with the rankings from last night is I understand where they're coming from, and I understand why Penn State's ranked ahead of Clemson. And you know what? I went to Penn State, and I root for them, and I'm happy that that's the case. Penn State has played a tougher schedule. They have more quality wins
than Ohio State.
Than Clemson.
Than Clemson, I'm sorry, okay.
So I think if you're looking at the resumes of these two teams, there's no way in which Clemson's resume is better. But I think if you watch the games, I don't think anyone would, myself included, would think that Penn State would beat Clemson, barring some sort of minor miracle. And so I understand that they're going with resumes, but why is Alabama ahead of Penn State too then? Like, I think Penn State either has the third best resume in the country, which I think they do. I think they'd be behind Ohio State and LSU. Maybe even the second best resume. It might be better than Ohio State's.
Right, right.
Or they're the fifth best team in the country based on what we've seen. There's no. It just seems to me that the committee kind of picks and chooses whatever criteria it wants and says, you know what, we're going to put Clemson four because their resume is better than. Or Penn State four because their resume is better than Clemson, but we're going to put Alabama three because the eye test has it better than Penn State. And I just like. I'm fine with it either way. I'm fine if Penn State were five. I'm fine if they were two or three. But I just don't like the kind of ability the committee has to almost pick and choose where teams
go based on whatever
their criteria is.
Right. That's the thing is that I've never been a big fan of the eye test because the eyes can be deceived sometimes.
Yeah.
And the eyes can be biased sometimes. So, you know, your eyes might be clear looking at a team like Penn State, but they might be a little foggy looking at a team like Alabama based on everything you've seen Alabama be in the past.
And I thought Alabama last year was one of the best teams ever seen, and then they got steamrolled by Clemson in the national championship game. So the eye test tells you what you already assume until you get proven wrong. And you have to assume, you have to understand that sometimes you will get proven wrong. Maybe Alabama or Clemson isn't that good. And if they lose one game, they shouldn't be in the top four just because they're Alabama and Clemson. I think they both are that good. I think they'll both probably win out and probably be in the playoff. But I don't think it's fair or in the spirit of sports in general to just put a team there because they deserve it based on who they are. They need to actually earn it based on the games they win on the field. And so if Penn State and Clemson both end the season with one loss, I put Penn State in over Clemson because they will have beaten Michigan and beaten Iowa, and Clemson will have beaten North Carolina and South Carolina. And I think there's a big difference in terms of what you've accomplished versus who you are and who the public views you as.
Excuse me. Got me all choked up there.
Man, that was such a good explanation.
Anyway.
Nittany Lions.
I'm looking at, you know, for us here in San Diego who don't, you know, have a Big Ten team to root for. My alma mater, San Diego State, is undefeated right now. Or excuse me, they're one loss, right?
Yeah, 7-1.
Yeah, they're one loss, 7-1. They're looking at the bottom half of these college rankings, right? You're looking at teams who are not in the Big Five conferences, trying to find a way into a New Year's Day bowl game. And
they could do it.
They definitely can. The only problem right now is SMU is ahead of them at 25. Boise State's also ahead of them at 22, and Memphis is ahead of them at 21.
Navy too.
I left out Navy. Also, they're at 24-7-1. So there's some teams that they're going to have to jump. They're going to need some help, obviously, down the line. But more importantly, they got to win the rest of their games moving forward.
Yeah, that's the big thing. And if they do that, I think there is a real reasonable chance that they could make that New Year's Six Bowl.
What did Kirk Kenny say yesterday? He said there was a one in a million chance they make a New Year's Day Bowl. We're like, thanks,
Kirk. He revised it at the end of the conversation, but he certainly busted our bubble immediately as soon as we started talking to him.
I think that was the first question.
So if you're the San Diego State fan who likes to root for that one in a million chance, or whatever Kirk actually has it as, there is a decent chance because all these teams, Navy, SMU, and Memphis, are in the same division.
Right. Yeah,
only
true.
One of them can win it.
True.
And then if one of those teams gets knocked off in the conference championship game, then it goes to the Mountain West winner.
That's what you're hoping, right? But both of them are going to need another loss prior to getting there, because if they both get there, even if one has a loss, if that team wins, they stay ahead,
sure.
and it's going to make
you
got to
root for other things to work
yes.
out.
But that's the beauty.
The possibility's there.
Yeah, no
and
doubt
you know
about
what?
It.
I think, and I would love for the college football playoff to expand to 8 teams.
That was going
to
be my next question.
I think it'd be great to have one group of 5 team just guaranteed a spot in the 8, and that's it. And then all of a sudden this discussion isn't just about kind of who gets in that fun Cotton Bowl berth. It's all of a sudden
who
gets a shot to go up against Clemson in that in whatever, in the 1-8 game or whatever you want to make
I think Jim Harbaugh yesterday came out and said he wanted 11 teams, which doesn't
that's
make
odd.
Sense.
11?
I know.
That's so Jim Harbaugh.
Like,
right
you get
here.
The first one, the first guy gets a bye, and then the other 10 have to play each other. But, yeah, 11.
Yeah, yeah. let's not
let's,
do that.
Let's crawl before we walk, you know what I'm saying? Let's go ahead and try to get the 8 first before we move to 11. All right, 6:13, we're going to get out of here and take a break for a second. When we come back, Odd Thomas in the building, NFL news and notes. 6:20. Hopefully you're in the car, on your way home from a long day's work. Get to hear my beautiful voice. Just kidding.
And mine, whatever that is.
Tony Gwynn Jr., AJ Casabelle here chilling. Last hour, last 40 minutes of the show. Odd Thomas is in the building, and that usually means NFL news and notes. Thomas?
Now you make them listen to my voice.
Great.
So we, before
as he gets it deeper, by the way, now you get to listen to my voice.
All right, here we go. So before break, we were talking about the Cleveland Browns during the break, and it's safe to say the Cleveland Browns season hasn't been what most people thought it would be. And at 2-6, the team looks almost completely lost on offense. But one bright spot has been second-year running back Nick Chubb, who has put together a nice season thus far with over 800 yards and 6 touchdowns. And some more help may be on the way as Kareem Hunt has returned from his 8-game suspension. And here's Freddie Kitchens talking about having two dynamic running backs.
Both of their skill sets offer you plenty of opportunities to do a lot with those guys. They're both excellent runners, and they both catch the ball very well out of the backfield. They're good protectors. That makes them good all-around running backs.
And today, also, Freddie Kitchens was asked about, you know, if there's a chance Kareem Hunt could play this week, and he said, you know, we're going to have talked about him getting in football shape, and this is him talking about his conditioning.
It's a lot different than being in good shape and having endurance. The difference between having endurance and being in shape is being in shape, you can go out and run a bunch of wind sprints. Having endurance is what you need for football, and that's to play play after play after play after play and never coming off the field. So he's building his endurance during the course of these last 2 weeks.
So the Browns may be getting some help on offense because Kareem Hunt is a little more better as a receiver out of the backfield. But, you know, it's more help, more offensive weapons, but, you know, might be a little too late for the Browns season right now.
I definitely think it's too little too late, but you always welcome a guy who has done some damage in the NFL. Now, the shape thing is a real thing, right? I mean, fortunately, you have a guy like Nick Chubb, so it's not like he needs to be out there play after play after play. Although, part of me wonders when you're losing and you have a losing record, the conversation isn't going to be just about football when he comes back. It's going to be about some of the things he's done to maybe rehabilitate himself. But the conversation certainly won't just be about football. And it's going to be interesting to see with the, I don't want to say there's turmoil, but clearly they're losing football games. We saw Odell Beckham starting to lose it on the sideline. Is this going to be a helpful situation, Kareem Hunt coming back this late? I don't know.
I don't think it is. I mean, I know he's a really good player, but they're 2-6, and they have a long way to go to be in playoff contention. And you're bringing back a guy with a pretty troubled past, and you already have Nick Chubb, who's really, really, really good. And so I maybe they get a little bit better because of this on the field, but optics wise, the Browns. I don't know. It's been a long season, and we're only halfway there. And
yeah.
You know what? We'll see. Maybe Baker has something left in him. I still think there is a ceiling to him that's yet to be tapped into that could be, but
I gotta say,
closer to.
I'm actually feeling bad for Baker Mayfield.
And why do you say that?
I for one, I'm starting to see some humility. I am. I know he went off on a reporter for a dumb question the other day. That's just frustration. That happens to pretty much all those guys in NFL. But I'm starting to see some humility from him. Like
maybe it's a good thing.
I,
I think it's a great thing.
Yeah.
You know, when you think you're the you-know-what, and you're 2-6, and you have a whole bunch of interceptions behind it, it's kind of hard to feel that way anymore.
But remember,
that's the dumbest question you could ask.
And we both said that the reporter was kind of out of line for not allowing him to answer the question and all that, but we also said in the offseason that Baker Mayfield is setting himself up for this.
I'm not saying everything that he's got coming his way hasn't been deserved. We talked about it. The thing about media that I've learned is you try to build up equity with them, right? You stand in front of your locker, you answer questions, you don't be a jerk, you know, you don't pop off, because every time you do the things that Baker did kind of leading into this season, it's just one thing that they have to write about when things go bad. So why give them the ammo?
It's a little tougher when you're the quarterback and the number one pick and of a franchise that's going in the direction that they've been going for so long, though. I imagine it's really hard for him to build up that equity, and he is just who he is, you know? Like, at what point do you say, you know what, we want Baker to be Baker, versus we want Baker to maybe tone down what he's about?
That's a great point.
I think the reason why you haven't seen very many quarterbacks do this is for that very reason. Is that you do have to be in front and center all the time. And granted, listen, it's your prerogative. You do what you want to do. You be who you are. But you got to be able to deal with the consequences when everybody's throwing shade based on how you have acted.
Yeah, I think there's a fine line that he can learn. He can learn how to kind of be that cocky, maybe borderline arrogant guy, but not take it too far and still be able to kind of assess the game.
And that is why I said I feel like I'm starting to see some humility from him, because I feel like the Baker in the offseason would have just kept bucking the system even though he was 2-6.
Now, do you think that if, say, next year they go 13-3, make a deep playoff run, he gets back onto his Bakerness, or do you think he's going to be learning from this and he's going to be humble going
forward? I honestly believe he's learning from this moving forward. I think he'll eventually be the quarterback that I think all of us think he has the potential to be. I just think it's a learning curve. When you got those kind of, I don't want to say, when you got those kind of egos in one locker room, it's going to take some time to learn how to manage it a little bit. Sorry, we went a long way with your first note there.
No, that was perfect. I mean, also you got to think too, is it going to throw off Nick Chubb too, now having to split some carries with Kareem Hunt? I mean, he's having a great year. And
you know what I like about Nick Chubb? Reminds me of Barry Sanders, man. That dude scores, just hands the ball to the referee, keeps him moving. And for that reason, that kind of mindset, it usually won't affect him, right? He's just going to, they want to be in the play? All right, I'm going to go get 6 yards here, get the ball back. I'm doing what I'm asked.
All right, for right now, it looks like Minshew Mania is over. For
all
now.
Come to an end.
As yesterday, Jaguars head coach Doug Marrone said Tuesday that former Super Bowl MVP Nick Foles will start for the team after the bye week. Here is Doug Marrone talking about the decision to switch a quarterback.
Made a decision on the quarterbacks, and then Nick will be our starting quarterback going forward. And it was obviously my decision. Worked hard on it, came to it. Brought both players in this morning. Spoke to both of them. After I spoke to the players, then obviously I wanted to make sure I spoke to the team, and then I wanted to get it to our media before they heard it anywhere else of where I can't control.
So maybe there is some hope for the Jaguars
Jaguars.
Some hope left that this former Super Bowl MVP can come in and, you know, maybe take over, because he's made Minshew has made guys like DJ Chark and Chris Conley stars in this league, or at least, you know, bigger names so far this year. And the first half of football he played looked pretty good against the Chiefs, but we'll see if he can stay healthy.
Here's my thing with Gardner Minshew. If you got Nick Foles and you play the rest of the season, Nick Foles plays well, do you keep Gardner Minshew on your team and have him as a backup, or do you try to trade him for something because he's a starter in the NFL elsewhere?
If I'm the Jaguars, I'm hanging on to him. Nick Foles, I know we remember Nick Foles' Super Bowl, but Nick Foles has the tendency to kind of go up and down. You know,
and be injured.
He had a collarbone to start the season. I've seen him put together a year in which he has like one or two interceptions, and then the following year just look like a completely different quarterback. So I get the signing of bringing Foles in, you know, after leading his team to a Super Bowl and then getting them to a playoffs spot when they probably looked like they weren't going to get in. But you still got to have backup plans in the NFL. Gardner Minshew is a pretty good backup plan should something happen to Nick Foles, as we saw by evidence of this year so far.
Here's another kind of interesting way to look at it. If Nick Foles comes back and plays kind of well, but the Jaguars still like what they have in Gardner Minshew, maybe they're paying Nick Foles a lot of money.
Yes, they are.
He's 4 years, $84 million, I think he signed.
Okay, so if they,
if he
kind of proves that he's at least some version of the quarterback that took the Eagles to the Super Bowl, maybe that's a tradable contract all of a sudden, and maybe Gardner's your guy, and maybe you have all that money to kind of address other areas on the team, the defense. I mean, the Jaguars are only, what, 2 years removed, a year and a half removed from being in the AFC Championship, taking the Patriots down to the wire.
With Blake Bortles?
With Blake Bortles. And so now if you have a guy on his rookie contract, a sixth-round pick, I don't know that he's the answer. I don't think I've seen enough out of Gardner Minshew to tell me that, but I don't know that Nick Foles is the answer either. And so if neither of them are the definitive answer, you take the cheaper option and maybe try and trade the other one.
Right. You should try to build the pieces around them a little better.
Speaking of former MVPs, the Carolina Panthers have put Cam Newton on IR, and with that foot injury, or Lisfranc, and the rumors are swirling that Cam Newton's time in Carolina is over with all the injuries piling up, and he's due about $20 million in his net. Well, I think he's got one more year left, AJ mentioned, on his contract.
I think that's right.
And so Kyle Allen has stepped in, has played well, and here's Kyle Allen talking about Cam Newton.
You know, he's been rehabbing. He hasn't been out there as much, you know, in the past couple weeks anyway, so I think, you know, everyone kind of could see it coming in some sort of way, I guess, you know, because he's been working so hard to get back and he hasn't really been out there. But, I mean, we understand what we have to do as a team. We have to take this week by week. This week it's Green Bay, and we know the guys we have out there that we're going to travel to Green Bay and we're going to try and win that game with.
And later in his little press conference, he was talking, and he said, you know, they talked to him about now that Cam is on IR and done for the year, does this change the way you're thinking or your mindset going into this year?
From before he went on IR, my job was to get ready to play every week. And then when someone told me it was not my turn to play anymore, then that's when I would stop playing. And so it's still the same thing right now. So it's like I tell you guys every single week. I take it week by week. I focus on the simple things, and we try and go out and win games on Sunday.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
So it seems as though Kyle Allen, you know, really nice guy, really does seem to care about Cam Newton, but at the same time, nothing's changed for him.
Yeah, listen, I think much like you were just saying, AJ, when things become equal, you take the cheaper guy. I think that's what's going to end up happening. I mean, Cam is definitely not in his prime anymore, at least I would think. He has the ability to play at a high level, I believe that. But you got a young quarterback. It's not like the team has struggled. They played pretty well. Although I think Cam is the guy, still should be the guy. If he's hurt, this is a no-brainer. You got to go with that decision to start Kyle Allen the rest of the way.
Yeah, I think that's what you do in the short term. They're going to have an interesting decision to make in the offseason, though. Just because with Nick Foles and Gardner Minshew, how much better is Nick Foles than Gardner Minshew?
Even at his best, right.
I don't know that it's that much better. With Cam Newton, elite kind of skill set that no one else really has. And he's not, I'm looking here, his cap hits $21 million for next season. For a quarterback, that's not that much. Right. And that's only 1 year. And so I don't know that it's not, you don't look at this as, well, you take the younger, cheaper option because things are equal, because things aren't necessarily equal. I think you got to learn, you got to figure out what's up with his health, first of all. And if he's healthy enough, I don't know that Kyle Allen's the answer. Cam Newton is a better answer than Kyle Allen.
I don't think Kyle Allen is the answer. I've said that on this show. I don't believe he is.
Yeah.
But we've seen the economics of the NFL work in a way that would send a guy like Cam Newton to the Bears, get some picks for him, and they live with it, you know?
It's almost like the NFL now, in some regards, some teams will take a mediocre quarterback that has a good contract rather than paying a huge guy.
Yes.
You know, even if that guy is taking him to maybe not the Super Bowl. You're going to keep them. But playoff runs, you know, you might want to save money by taking the mediocre
look at
guy.
Andy Dalton right now.
Exactly.
That's a very good one.
I think there's two ways to win, though. I mean, you can win with the star quarterback getting paid a lot of money, and you can win with a not-star quarterback not getting paid a lot of money.
Give me an example
of a not-star quarterback, I mean,
recently.
Well, Eli Manning on his first contract.
I mean, some people got Eli as a Hall of Famer.
I have Eli as a Hall of Famer, but in 2008, Eli Manning wasn't very good. And there's, off the top of my head, it might be tough to come up with.
I can think of one that got him to a Super Bowl, not won it, Jake DeLone. But that was a while ago.
What about Rex Grossman?
A few years ago. Rex Grossman.
That was even longer.
So let's go under the current salary cap. current salary cap, I don't know. But I think it's you can't be paying quarterbacks that aren't elite quarterback money when you have other places on the roster to spend.
I think that is the name of the game, though, because quarterbacks are so important to the team that almost by default you got to pay them that kind of money, regardless of whether they're elite or not. There's what? Three, four elite quarterbacks? Like elite quarterbacks? Five quarterbacks in the league?
I put like seven or eight guys that are Super Bowl guys that will carry you to a Super Bowl, not guys that could win a Super Bowl.
Everybody else is almost in the same boat, minus two or three guys.
So an example is the Jaguars a few years ago, and they didn't make the Super Bowl. They lost by, I think, 4 points in the fourth quarter. But they did it with a defense, a running game, and a quarterback on a rookie salary, cheap quarterback.
What about Joe Flacco when he won the Super Bowl? He got his big deal, I believe, after the Super Bowl.
Same with Russell Wilson, too. When he won his, he was on his rookie deal. And they had all that money loaded into the Legion of Boom.
Yeah. Jared Goff was on his rookie deal last year, and the Rams built around him. They put the right pieces in place.
Ugh, $120 million right there.
And now he's making a lot of money.
When you look at Jeff Goff, and you look at Kyle Allen, is there any comparisons there?
I'm not comparing those.
Is that it? Oh, that does it for Odd Thomas's NFL news and notes. Nice work, Odd Thomas.
I'll give you one more update. AJ Green practiced today, but after walkthroughs, he said his ankle started swelling up and now is listed as day-to-day and might not make his debut this week.
I should have traded him.
You should have, because I was asking for him. You're bad. All right. We got one more segment to go. Stay tuned. We are going to replay. Who's the interview? We're playing Shannon Crowders. Shannon Crowder, in case you missed it, he was terrific earlier, giving us the NFL breakdown, Chargers to London, kind of breaking down the MVP ratio here to hear Gwynn and Chris, 97.3, The Fan. 641, Tony Gwynn Jr., AJ Casavell, hanging out. Last segment of the night. AJ, thanks for coming in today.
Yes, it's fun.
Yeah, we had a good time. Had a nice debate. They got to see what a little bit goes on behind the scenes at Petco Park occasionally.
Some two-strike approach talk.
Bill called in just giving up mad props to everybody. I love it. Thank you, Bill. Thank you for listening. All right, in case you weren't listening earlier, which I don't know how you wouldn't be listening earlier. This is a terrific show. In case you weren't listening earlier, we're lucky enough to catch up with Channing Crowder. And as always, he did not disappoint. Of course, the Chargers were in the news yesterday. Everybody wants to move them somewhere. It's either back here to San Diego. They want to move them to London and another country. But I don't think it's going to happen. And we're going to talk about it a little bit more. On the line is Radio.com Sports NFL Insider Channing Crowder. As always, Insider calls are brought to you by Indeed. Post a job today at Indeed.com/hire. Channing, thanks for joining us. How are you doing today, brother?
Good, man. I appreciate y'all having me. How are things out there in San Diego? I know they're beautiful. I've been to San Diego before. It is awesome out there.
It is beautiful. We're having one of our really first fall days. The weather's been kind of crazy out here.
Crazy for San Diego
standards. Let me stop. Yeah, crazy for San Diego standards.
Yeah, bro, we have that down here. A cold front moving through Miami, and it's going to be about 65. we're not San Diego weather, but I know what y'all are saying.
Yeah, you know exactly what we're talking about. One of the crazy things that's going on about 2 hours up the highway here is the Chargers. They a team that had done really well last year, had Super Bowl aspirations this year, but haven't played very well. And, of course, when you're not playing very well and the visiting team comes into your place and pretty much dominating the attendance, the theme there the last 3 years since they've been there is let's move them somewhere. How realistic is the Chargers going to London, A, and B, what is the infatuation with the NFL wanting to have a team in London?
Oh, well, first off, the infatuation is easy. It's money. The more eyes, the more money. Like, y'all know what it's about. It's a $9 billion recession-proof business that continues to make more money every single year. I don't care what the market's doing. I don't care what the anthem, the national anthem, protest stuff and all. They still made more money. So more eyes, international series. That's why we're going to Mexico. Last time, when they played in Mexico, it was an 80-yard field because it was, you know, ripped up like – They're trying to get more eyes, therefore more jersey sales, therefore more money. So I understand the business side of it, but from a player perspective, moving a team to London is terrible, man. It's going to be so hard. Like if I was playing and a team was in London, I would take less money to stay in the United States. The travel is going to hard to get my family out there. My nutritionist, my stretching guys, my doctors, my just it's so much stuff that a player does outside of the facility that he, you know, he needs to be in the United States. Like when I played, I had so many other guys, you know, so many other ways to maximize my body, which is the players, you know, which is their business. The Channing Crowder LLCs, you know, the Phillip Rivers LLCs, the Joey Bosa LLCs. That's what the NFL is. So the whole London thing, I understand the push. I actually played in the first game over there in the international series, the Giants versus the Dolphins. They ended up whooping us, you know, big Brandon Jacobs that. I hit him a couple times. I broke my face mask, hit him one time. He was a grown man. So I played it. It was nice. It's a beautiful city. It's fun to go over there. The players enjoy it. But we enjoyed the 8 days over there. Yeah. I don't want to be over there for 10 months. Like, that's just ridiculous. How would they do it? And I think that if they do move a team to London, that team will never compete because there's going to be guys that flat out say, I'm not going to play in London. I don't care how much money y'all pay me.
So then is it even a realistic thing? I mean, it's nice for the NFL to dream on because of the money that it would represent, but how could this ever come to pass if it is kind of so, I guess, widely criticized by everyone who's involved who would be needing to move to London or the logistics of getting players to want to be there? Like, how is this a realistic thing that you think in your mind could happen?
They could. Thinking about it right now, they could actually maybe that your salary would have to be higher. There has to be some kind of crazy stipend. You know what I'm saying? Some kind of crazy travel stipend. Some kind of crazy fund that the players get to dip into for the inconvenience of being over there. The traveling back and forth. The thing that they would have to argue with, minus the players not wanting to be there. Because like you're saying, you throw a couple guys some money, you know, they'll go wherever to play ball. But the athletic, you know, problem, the part of going, flying back and forth over and over again to try to play a game, getting on the plane. You know, I remember flying long flights, playing the Chargers when I was in Miami, playing Seattle when I was in Miami. You swell up on the plane. They tell you to wear these sleeves and take ibuprofen and all this stuff for a 4-hour trip. Now you want to have guys take 16-hour trips, 12-hour trips. It would be a disadvantage for the team that plays in London. So the NFL, if you take the money out of it, they know it doesn't make any sense. But they see those dollar signs. So they would have to do just crazy stipends. I would say the team in London would have multiple bye weeks. They would really have to work the schedule. They would have to work the schedule to perfection to where they come to the U.S. and they play 3 home games in a row and then go back to London and play 2 or 3 games in a row and just so they could take down on the travel. But to be honest, if I have to bet money on, I'm a gambling man. Now, I like the over and unders. I like the point spreads. I would bet there will not be a team in London just because of the disadvantage the team will have on the football field, period.
Yeah, ultimately, you can't have the actual product on the field suffer because of it. And based on the points you bring up, Channing, it seems like it would be a huge disadvantage for the visiting team having to go there 16, 12 hours and then have to play a game against a team that probably will be acclimated at the time being in London. Let me ask you this, Channing, because around football, one of the biggest surprises is the San Francisco 49ers. And even to this point right now, this team is undefeated. A lot of people still aren't quite buying it. What are you seeing from the San Francisco 49ers?
49ers can play ball, man. I was a doubter. I was a doubter a long time. I'm still a doubter on the Buffalo Bills. Okay record, but they haven't played anybody. So the 49ers have ballers at every level defensively. I'm not saying Jimmy Garoppolo's a top 15 guy, top 12 if you want to be nice. He's not an elite quarterback, but the run game that they put together. I'll tell you this, Kyle Shanahan, I love Andy Reid. I love Andy Reid. I played against Andy Reid when he was in Philly. Like, I love Andy Reid. He come out, we play against Andy, he comes out an offensive set, and you're on the field, and you're giving him props in your mind. You're like, oh, we haven't seen, we've never seen this formation. We've never seen this motion. We've never seen this shift. Like, I love Andy Reid. Kyle Shanahan is sneaking up on that. Like, his scheme, the run, the different forms he runs out of. I enjoy the X and O's of football. You know, I'm a little football nerd when it comes to film. So just the three tight end sets, the two tight end sets, the wide open running, spread them out to run, bringing them in tight to pass. Like, Kyle is on top of that. His daddy wasn't bad at it either, but he just, the offense, it runs through Kyle. He's smart enough to do it. But defensively, man, what the pressure to get up front, the defensive back staff, just every level, Sherman and just all those guys, Nick Bosa right now, I'm not talking about rookie of the year, fellas. I'm talking about defensive player of the entire league. Mm. That's the level Nick Bosa's playing at right now. There are some teams with good records, like Green Bay, who the Chargers end up whooping. There are some teams with decent records that you don't know about yet. I would say the 49ers are a team, especially in the NFC. Now, in the AFC, you got KC, you got New England. In the NFC, Seattle's okay. They end up getting whooped. The Patriots lost to Baltimore. Both of those teams are top level. But you go to the NFC, fellas, and I say the 49ers are right up there with the Saints as a team that could take over that division and represent them in the Super Bowl.
I want to switch over to the AFC. I think the story of the week right now is Lamar Jackson. And in my mind, it's early, but he's an early MVP candidate. If Bill Belichick can't solve that, my question is, how do you defend the things that he does? Because he's a very good passer, an elite runner, and there aren't many guys like him. And so I've always felt the mark of a good player is someone who can pick apart the Patriots, who can make things difficult on Bill Belichick. We saw what he did on Sunday night. How would you go about stopping that?
The bad thing is that most running quarterbacks, or the good thing for the Ravens, the bad thing for everybody else, is most running quarterbacks don't have that arm like that. Like Michael Vick, you know, he evolved into it. Cam Newton, actually, he struggled, and he had his one good year, but now his athleticism leaving him, and we're seeing, I believe, the Carolina Panthers to get rid of him. But when Lamar Jackson, we played him first game of the year, they beat the Dolphins 59-10. Like, who scores 60 points in an NFL game? We tried to load the box, like people would do, running quarterback, load the box, he's an extra runner. Okay, you have the handoff, you have the quarterback, you have the pitch man, assignment football. If you take all those guys out of the secondary to try to stop Lamar, now you're in one-on-one. Now everybody's man-to-man. You might be in cover one, but we were sitting in cover zero a lot of times, worrying about Lamar's legs, and he destroyed us, had 300-plus yards passing. Him and Hollywood Brown. Hollywood Brown had like 125 yards on three catches against us. This year, Lamar, I don't know if they learned how to throw, but he became way more accurate. Coming out of Louisville, I was worried about his accuracy. His athleticism is there, man. Like I said, I played Michael Vick. They had me spy Michael Vick one time. He broke for 40. The coach told me, if you're spying him, don't look at him, because then he knows you're spying him. I said, Coach, I said, Coach, how am I going to spy him if I don't look at him? Well, don't let him know you're spying him. I said, yeah, Coach, we need to change the defense right now, because I'm supposed to spy at him, have a spy on him with no eye on the spy. Like, it was ridiculous. So I know how it is to play, you know, play a quarterback like that. But like I say, Vic and Algie Crumpler whooped us for about 400 yards one time, but that's what Lamar learned how to do. He was throwing dimes the first two or three weeks, because after he whooped Dolphins, I kept watching Lamar, and I just see him develop. I see him throwing guys open. Yeah. A lot of young quarterbacks, they have to see a guy wide open to hit him. You see Lamar letting the ball go when the DB is still engaged with the receiver before his break. Like, John Harbaugh has done an amazing job of developing this young man, and I was a detractor too. The running quarterback, the Josh Allen, he's been going back to Buffalo. He's not that good. Josh is an athlete that they put at quarterback. I thought Lamar was an athlete they put at quarterback, fellas. No, Lamar is a quarterback that's an amazing athlete. He proved that to me this year. And I would say, like you said, I'm perfect, man. I love Bill Belichick. He's a genius. He's my Andy Reid of defensive football. And if Bill Belichick can't stop you, which Bill, if you think about it, that's what the Patriots struggle with historically, is athletic quarterback. If Bill can't stop you, there's no way these first or second or third or fourth year defensive coordinators are going to find a way to stop Lamar Jackson. Bill Belichick has seen more football than we've thought about, and he can't stop them. I think that's what I'm saying. The Ravens, because you were saying New England was the top team in the AFC. You know, Kansas City with Mahomes going down, but you have to give the Ravens some love up there as one of the top teams, not just in the AFC, but in the NFL.
Channing, as always, you were terrific, man. We appreciate you coming on. We'll catch up with you soon. Once again, thanks for coming on.
Appreciate you, bro. Anytime, man, let me know. I'm down here in Miami, so we got the same struggle of beautiful weather year-round.
All right, Channing, take care. Like I said, as always, Channing Crowder does not disappoint when he comes on the show. We got a few minutes before we go, and I thought this was a great story to end on. Mitchell Trubisky wants all the televisions turned off inside Hollis Hall to insulate the struggling team from the outside criticism. AJ, how you feel about that?
Deal with the criticism?
It's
part of the job. Yeah, I mean, like, part of the reason you're getting paid all this money to be a starting quarterback in the NFL is because people care deeply about the league. And so, I mean, sure, I don't really care all that much what the Bears do inside their own practice facility,
right,
but you're going to hear criticism, and it's just going to be part of it. And a lot of it's going to be unfair, and some of it is going to be fair. And
I just want to read his quote because I just find it deep down hilarious, right? Trying to get some of these TVs in the building turned off because you got too many people talking on TV about us and what they think about us, what we should do, what we are and what we're not, Trubisky said before Wednesday's practice. But they don't really know who we are or what we're capable of as people or what we're going through or what we're thinking. It's just the outside viewers looking in. I love how he is making it an us thing.
Yeah.
Because I don't really hear anybody talking about the Bears other than the quarterback position. The defense is perfectly fine. I don't think I hear anything else. So when he's saying us,
there might be some coaching and some kicking things.
But I don't think coaches are walking around listening to the TV.
Yeah, maybe he shouldn't be listening to what they're saying on the TV. And I what he's saying has merit.
No doubt.
I mean,
it has merit for all 32 teams.
Yeah, and in any sport.
Right.
I mean, I think like when we talk about the issues that go on with certain teams, we focus only on the players who are struggling and what's going on in the field, and we ignore other issues that are happening deep inside the locker rooms, and we all get that. That being said, that's part of the gig. You're going to get
criticized
if you're the starting quarterback.
I have zero problem with him wanting the TVs off so that they can kind of shut the outside noise off. But talking to it to the media, I don't think does him any good at all.
Yeah, that's a story that maybe we shouldn't be talking
about
right now.
Just turn the TVs off. Don't talk about it. Why are the TVs? If somebody asks you, you know what?
What's their record? 3-5?
3-5.
If Tom Brady says that, if Jimmy G says that, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's a great move because they're winning football games.
They're not winning them in Chicago.
That's true.
Right. That does it for Gwen and Chris this Wednesday. Again, AJ Casabell, thank you for coming in, man. You were terrific as usual.
A lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Matt Scraby, nice work. Thomas Andrews, brilliant as usual. Chris Eller returns tomorrow. We'll see you tomorrow. Gwen and Chris, 97.3, The Fan.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app. Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.